Strong, and this is VOA 1, the hits. Happy New Year.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, Andrew Smith looks back at clean energy developments in 2022. Then, you will hear Alice Bryant present an Everyday Grammar episode for the new year. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, the United States has announced new COVID-19 testing requirements for all travelers from China. The new rules follow an easing of pandemic restrictions in China that has led to rising infection rates among the Chinese population. The new U.S. requirements are set to begin January 5th. They will cover all travelers from China, regardless of nationality and regardless of whether they have been vaccinated against COVID-19. Under the new rules, travelers to the U.S. from China, Hong Kong, and Macau will be required to take a COVID-19 test no more than 2 days before travel. They must provide a negative test before getting on their flight. The requirements cover any traveler 2 years and older, including American citizens. Anyone who tests positive for COVID-19 more than 10 days before a flight can provide documentation showing they have recovered from the virus instead of a negative test result. It will be up to airline companies to confirm negative tests and documentation of recovery before passengers can get on flights. Other countries have taken similar steps in an effort to keep infections from spreading beyond China's borders. Japan will require a negative COVID-19 test upon arrival for travelers from China. Malaysia announced new measures to track travelers. India, Italy, South Korea, and Taiwan are also requiring virus tests for visitors from China. In a statement, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, explained that the latest rules were necessary to deal with China's rising infection rate. In addition, the agency said China has not been open in communicating with other nations about what virus versions, called variants, are currently spreading in the country. The CDC said such data is important to help countries effectively watch the situation in China and to reduce the chance that a new variant of concern could enter the U.S. Some scientists fear China's current rise in infections could release a new COVID-19 variant on the world that may or may not be similar to ones already spreading. Matthew Binnaker is a virologist at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. He told the Associated Press, "What we want to avoid is having a variant enter into the U.S. and spread, like what we saw with Delta or Omicron."
More governments increased plans to support renewable energy and reduce emissions from fossil fuels like oil and gas in 2022. In India, the government plans to send $2.6 billion to support the manufacture of equipment used for solar energy. Companies like Renew Power hope to gain from the plan. The energy company has over 100 clean energy projects across India. It has also become the world's 10th largest solar and wind energy company in 10 years. Renew Power's chief, Sumant Sinha, said the government spending on renewable energy sends a strong signal that the country wants to become a manufacturing location for renewable energy equipment and a global alternative to China. In August, the United States signed into law the Inflation Reduction Act. The legislation includes about $375 billion in spending over the next 10 years to support renewable energy. The law approves government support for the electric car industry and solar energy industry. Earlier this year, the European Commission presented a plan to reduce European dependence on Russian oil and gas. It also aims to speed up the change to renewable energy. Kingsmill Bond is an energy expert at the nonprofit Rocky Mountain Institute based in the state of Colorado. He said that fossil fuel demand reached its highest point in 2019 and will at some point start to go down. Bond added that the price of renewable energy was getting closer to that of fossil fuels, and in some cases, it was cheaper. A report from the International Energy Agency said that oil prices rose above $100 a barrel in the middle of 2022. High natural gas and coal prices pushed electricity costs higher in many places around the world. But increased use of renewable energy saved Asian countries, including China and India, a total of $34 billion in the past year, a separate report found. Along with the move towards clean energy, use of gas and coal increased in 2022. Partly in response to the war in Ukraine. As Russia's sale of gas to Western Europe was reduced, coal production increased in Germany. India's coal production also increased by about 17% from April to November 2022. It was a good year for renewable energy, but sadly, not a bad year for fossil fuels either, said Vibhuti Garg, a New Delhi-based energy economist at the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis based in Ohio. But pushed by earlier developments, wind and solar energy activity increased in 2022 in many parts of the world. Dave Jones is an energy expert at EMBER, an environmental organization based in London. He praised renewable forms of energy as being clean, low cost, and, in his words, secure. I'm Andrew Smith.
The new year can come on different dates for different cultures. Most of the Western world, for example, celebrates it on January 1st. But one thing many cultures have in common is the idea of New Year's resolutions. A New Year's resolution is a personal goal to change unwanted behavior, make a life improvement, or try something new. Popular New Year's resolutions in the United States, for example, include losing weight, improving your finances, volunteering for a charity, and spending less time on social media. On today's Everyday Grammar, we will show you how to talk about resolutions in English. First, let's learn how to ask people about their resolutions. Listen to a short conversation.
Hey there, Jill. Happy New Year. Great to see you.
Hi, Jonathan. Happy New Year to you, too. How was yours?
It was crazy. We went to New York and watched the ball drop in Times Square. Really crowded and loud, but still really fun.
Sweet. Do you have any New Year's resolutions?
Jill asked Jonathan about resolutions simply by saying, do you have any New Year's resolutions? You can also say, what are your New Year's resolutions? To ask about more than one, or what is your New Year's resolution? To ask about one. Now, let's find out how to answer the question. When we make statements about our resolutions, we often use phrasal verbs. We can use the phrasal verb take up to say that we will start a new activity as a hobby. Listen to Jill and Jonathan continue their conversation.
Sweet. Do you have any New Year's resolutions?
Yes, I do. I plan to take up kickboxing starting next week. I'm excited to finally do it rather than just talk about it. How about you?
Another phrasal verb for resolutions is give up, which is to stop doing or using something. We can use this verb to talk about ending bad habits or changing a behavior for a time. Let's hear Jill respond by using the verb give up.
How about you?
I'm giving up sugar for the month of January. Then for the rest of the year, I'm avoiding soft drinks.
Impressive. I wish I could join you, but kickboxing class starts soon. I'll probably want a sweet snack after class.
Another phrasal verb, cut out, has the same basic meaning as give up. For example, Jill could say, I am cutting out sugar for the month of January. But in many situations, we do not need phrasal verbs to talk about resolutions, as you will soon see. Next, let's talk about verb tenses and forms. Jonathan talked about his new kickboxing hobby using the verb plan followed by the infinitive verb form. And Jill talked about giving up sugar using the present continuous verb tense, also called be plus ing. We can also use the simple future tenses, one with will and the other with going to. These tenses are especially useful when the new year has not come yet. Imagine it's the last week of the year, and a few people are talking to each other about resolutions. Here are some things you might hear.
In 2020, I'm going to visit my parents every month.
By January 1st, I will end a few unhealthy friendships.
In the new year, I'm going to walk 10,000 steps every day.
When we use simple future tenses to talk about resolutions, we're expressing that we are making a promise to or plan for ourselves. The noun resolution comes from the verb resolve, which means to make a serious decision to do something. You may have noticed that the statements so far today did not actually use the word resolution. That is because the subject was already known by the listeners. But it is still perfectly normal to start your statements with, "My New Year's resolution is," or "My New Year's resolutions are." An infinitive verb or a gerund must come after these phrases. Here is an example.
My New Year's resolution is to call my sister on video chat every week.
The infinitive verb here is to call. You can also use a gerund, like this.
My New Year's resolution is calling my sister on video chat every week.
Well, that's all for today's program. Happy New Year! I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In the early weeks of 1863, the American Civil War took a new political direction. President Abraham Lincoln had announced the Emancipation Proclamation. That measure freed the slaves in the rebel states of the South, though Lincoln's words fell on deaf ears. Yet no longer was the Civil War a struggle just to save the Union. It had become a struggle for human freedom. There was a change on the military side of the war, too. President Lincoln named a new commander for the Union's Army of the Potomac. This was the force that would try again to capture the Confederate capital at Richmond, Virginia. Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant describe events during the spring of 1863.
General Joe Hooker was the new commander of the Army of the Potomac. He replaced General Ambrose Burnside when Burnside suffered a terrible defeat at Fredericksburg, Virginia, at the end of 1862. Burnside had replaced General George McClellan when McClellan kept refusing to obey President Lincoln's orders. Hooker had 130,000 men. They were well trained and well supplied. The Confederate force opposing Hooker's was under the command of General Robert E. Lee. Lee had only about 60,000 men. They did not have good equipment, and their supplies were low. But their fighting spirit was high. They had defeated the Union Army before. They were sure they could do it again.
Lee's army still held strong defensive positions along high ground south of Fredericksburg. This was almost halfway between the capitals of the opposing sides, Washington and Richmond. General Hooker did not plan to make the same mistake which General Burnside made at Fredericksburg. Burnside had thrown his army against Lee's defensive positions 6 times. Each time, the Confederates pushed them back easily. In one day of fighting, more than 12,000 Union soldiers were killed or wounded. General Hooker had rebuilt the Army of the Potomac. Now he was ready to carry out his plan against General Lee. Hooker left half his men at Fredericksburg in front of Lee's army. He would move the other half into position behind Lee's army. If Lee turned to meet him, the troops at Fredericksburg would attack. The Confederate army would be caught between two powerful forces. Lee would have to withdraw or lose his army.
Hooker moved around past the end of Lee's line. Then he turned and started marching back behind it. It was a hard march through thick woods and across rough hills and valleys. The country was so wild that it was called the Wilderness. On the last day of April, 1863, the Union force reached Chancellorsville. Chancellorsville was a crossroads near the edge of the Wilderness. The next day, the soldiers would be in open country. There, General Hooker could make the best use of his men. Hooker was extremely pleased. Everything was going as he had planned. He told his officers, "I have Lee in one hand and Richmond in the other." The next day, Union soldiers began moving out of Chancellorsville and the Wilderness. They did not get far. They ran into several thousand Confederate soldiers. Lee had sent them to slow the Union force.
The Confederate force was weak. General Hooker's officers believed they could smash through it without difficulty. They did not get a chance to try. Hooker sent new orders. Break off the fight. Return to Chancellorsville. Put up defensive positions. Hooker's officers were shocked. They protested. Hooker stood firm. He said, "Lee must fight me on my own ground." Robert E. Lee could not understand why the Union force had returned to Chancellorsville, but he was happy it did. Now he had time to prepare his men for battle.
Lee met that night with his top general, Stonewall Jackson. They discussed the best way to attack the Union force. The center of the Union line was strong. The right side was not. Jackson was sure he could get around behind it. Lee asked Jackson how many men he would take. "All of them," Jackson answered, 28,000. This meant Lee would have only 14,000 men to face General Hooker. If the Union force attacked before Stonewall Jackson got into position, Lee could not possibly hold it back. Lee was taking a huge chance. He thought about it for a moment. Then he told Jackson to get started.
Jackson's men began to leave the next morning. Union soldiers watched as they marched away. General Hooker thought Lee was withdrawing. It took Jackson only half a day to get behind the Union force. He spent a few more hours putting his troops into position. Then he attacked. It was 6 o'clock in the evening. The right end of the Union force was not prepared for an attack. The soldiers could not believe their eyes when they saw Confederate troops running out of the woods behind them. Many Union soldiers were killed or wounded. Thousands fled. The sun went down. The fighting continued under a bright moon. The Confederate troops kept moving forward. The Union troops kept falling back. One Northern soldier wrote later, "Darkness was upon us. Jackson was upon us. And fear was upon us."
Jackson seemed to be everywhere. He rode his horse among his men, urging them forward. He would not let the Union force escape. As Jackson and some of his officers rode into a cleared area of the woods, shots rang out. The bullets came from Confederate guns. The Confederate soldiers thought they were firing on Union officers. Jackson fell from his horse. Two bullets had smashed his left arm. Another bullet had hit his right hand. He was hurried to the back of the line. A doctor quickly cut off his left arm and stopped the heavy bleeding. Jackson seemed to get better. Then he developed pneumonia. He was unconscious most of the time. He seemed to dream of battle and shouted commands to his officers. Then he grew quiet. He opened his eyes and said, "Let us pass over the river and rest in the shade of the trees." The great Confederate general Stonewall Jackson was dead.
While Jackson lay dying, the Battle of Chancellorsville continued. Robert E. Lee's Confederate army was much smaller than Joe Hooker's Union army. But for 5 days, Lee kept part of his army moving between Chancellorsville and Fredericksburg. Wherever the Union army attacked, Lee quickly added more men to his lines. The Union army could not break through. The fighting was taking place on the south side of the Rappahannock River. The Union Army's supply lines were on the north side. Spring rains were beginning to make the Rappahannock rise. General Hooker did not want to get trapped without food and ammunition, so he ordered his men back across the river.
The South had won the Battle of Chancellorsville. Robert E. Lee was sure of that. Once again, he had forced back the Army of the Potomac. But the Union Army was not hurt seriously. New soldiers would soon take the place of those lost in battle. Lee, however, would find it more difficult to replace his soldiers. The South was running out of manpower. Every Confederate army needed men, more and more men. Yet fewer and fewer Southern boys were willing to become soldiers. Anti-war movements were, in fact, active in both the North and South. There were a number of protests against the military draft. Some turned violent. In the North, a political party was created to oppose the Civil War. Leaders of this peace party were called Copperheads. They got the name because they wore a copper penny showing the head of an Indian. That will be our story in our next program on the Civil War.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.